Now we're holding on page Lamed Vav in Yoma, about five lines from the bottom, middle of our Sinai Aleph. We started learning yesterday about a person was struck by a disease called bulmos. Not really a disease, but more like a sudden attack of an illness called bulmos. We talked yesterday, it's related to the word bulimia in English. It means a very dangerous kind of hunger, where if the person doesn't eat right away, like this, his eyesight dims, his other senses also get dulled, and if he doesn't eat right away, he could be in great danger. So we talked about that if that happens on Yom Kippur, you give the person to eat right away. And in general, the Gemara had talked about that you should give him sweet foods. Talked about maybe bulmos is low blood sugar or something, whatever it is. The point is you need to get him out of it as fast as possible. So the Gemara tells Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yosi have a ka'azli ba'urcha. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yosi one time were traveling on the road. Achze bulmos le Rabbi Yehuda. All of a sudden, Rabbi Yehuda was struck with this bulmos condition. So he needed to eat something right away. So he forced a local shepherd. He found a local shepherd. Kapche literally means like he cut him off or forced him. Achle the rifter, and he ate the bread that the shepherd had with him. Rabbeinu Hananel brings from the Yerushalmi that it was not just a little amount of bread. For Rabbeinu Hananel says it was everything the shepherd had. And he brings from the Yerushalmi it was no less than 24 esroinim, which is the total amount that's used for all of the lechem upon him. And he saw in as a shiur challah, so somewhere between 3 and 5 pounds, as we know when you're making challah. So the Yerushalmi says this is 24 times that, and Rabbi Yehuda needed all of that apparently in order to still his hunger. Amalei Rabbi Yosi ki pachta esroya. So Rabbi Yosi says, what'd you do? You cut off. You took advantage of this shepherd. Ki motu lamasa. Then when they came to a town. Then Rabbi Yosi was also struck all of a sudden by bulmos. The people of the town all of a sudden started bringing out. They realized you have to help Rabbi Yosi as fast as possible. So they started bringing him jars full of honey and other sweet things. The logi means like bottles or jars, but soy and plates of food. Rabbi Yehuda says, look at that. Aniki pachti es aroya. I only took advantage of that one shepherd. Vatiki pachta es kola ir es ir kola. You did that to the entire city. In other words, in Poshet Pshat, Rabbi Yehuda is telling him, you know, don't talk against what I did when it turns out that you actually did far worse. There is a very interesting point in this connection, actually. Now, you have a discussion in Halacha, and this was actually in Daf Yomi a day or two ago. There's a concept called matzel atzmei b'momin chaveri. Are you allowed to save yourself by at the cost of somebody else's mom? On the face of it, very little stands in the way of pikuach nefesh, so you should be allowed to. And the question is only, do you have to pay it back? So the Gemara tells a whole story involving David HaMelech and a shaila about that. So many Rishonim learn that you are in fact allowed to, you have to pay it back. On the other hand, there's a Rashi there on the sugya, on the relevant sugya in Bava Kamma that says that you're not allowed to. Now, does that actually mean flat out that you're not allowed to? And then in that case, how could that be? What happened to Pekuach Nefesh is Doricha almost Kola Torah Kola? So there are many different answers among them that maybe that's only according to some opinions, in particular according to the opinion of Reb Meir. There's a Gemara in Ksubis where the mayor says that if people are threatening Edom, you better testify falsely or we're going to kill you. The mayor holds they have to go on Mesiras Nefesh and not give false Edos. The halacha is not like that, so it may be following that. In any case, the vote would be that, so does Rashi actually mean that, or does Rashi mean that in fact you are allowed to, just you're not allowed to unless you have what to pay back, whatever, anyway. So the binyan siya and gives it the Shilos of Trovas Binyan C and discusses this Gemara, and he was a rav in Germany in the 19th century. Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger, his name was. He's most famous for his Sefer the Oruch HaNer, but he also wrote Shilos of Trovas called Binyan C. So he discusses this Gemara over here, and he says the vote may be that Rabbi Yosi may hold like Rabbi Meir that said that Ochtu lahatzel atzmei b'mamon chaveira. That's why he's calling out Rabbi Yehuda for it. Meanwhile, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with that concept. He says motu lahatzel. So he says to Rabbi Yosi, look at this. You know, I was matzel atzmei b'mamon chaveira of only one shepherd. Here, what's going on? Here you have the whole city brought out things for you. So therefore, so you see that what I was doing, you see that it was shown min hashamayim that what I was doing was not incorrect. You may hold like Rabbi Meir that it's also to do, but I'm not obligated to hold that. Anyway, so Vitu, now we have another story also involving these Chachamim traveling. Vitu, the mayor of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, Habu Ka'azli Ba'urcha. One time, so we had just now the two Chachamim, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. Now we have also a mayor was one time traveling with them. Now, Rabbi Meir have a diet bishma. Rabbi Meir was always particular to notice people's names and see on the basis of their name to decide whether this is likely to be a good person or not. Now, it's not always 100% foolproof thing, and Rabbi Meir himself points that out later on in the story. There's a medrash, for example, that mentions that sometimes you have people that have very ugly sounding names but do beautiful things. And of course, the flip side is also true. The medrash gives an example of a couple of the families that it mentions in Sefer Ezra that came to rebuild the second Beis Hamikdash. There's a family, they're called Bakbuk, which comes from a word that means empty. There's another one called Charchur, which comes from a word that means angry. So those are ugly names, but nevertheless, they have this chus that they're among the ones who came to rebuild the Beis Hamikdash. So sometimes it is, but Rabbi Meir, on the whole, would look at people's names and decide on that basis what kind of person they're likely to be. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi were not particular about that kind of thing. So, Kimotulahu Duchta, they came to a certain place, Bo Ushbiza, they're looking for a local inn where they can stay. Yavaluhu, and they found them an inn. Omrule Mashimcha, they asked the innkeeper, what's your name? Omrulahu Kidr. Omar, Reb Meir, you have over here, it would mean Reb Meir said to them, but then it's hard to understand because the continuation of the story is that they didn't know that he's a Rasha. We're here, Reb Meir is going to tell them that he is. So the printed Gemara doesn't have the words Lahu Reb Meir, that just Reb Meir said to himself. So he says, Shmamina Odom Roshahu. In that case, I see from that, that he must be a Rasha. Not must be, but there's a likelihood that he's a Rasha. Shenema, as you find the pasuk and has, ki der tapuches hema. Because they are a perverse generation. Specifically, Maharsha says this refers to the Gemara in Chagiga tells us that the Hashem's original plan, so to speak, was to give the Torah after 1,000 generations. But then Hashem saw, as it is, the world is going from bad to worse. So in the end, he gave it after 26 generations. Those 974 missing generations were like removed from the world. Kumtu b'loy es is the expression, and from them come the azei ponim. In every generation, they are the der tapuches. They're like the generation that was turned backward and not brought into the world in the first place, and now their neshamas come down at various times throughout the generations, and this and Reb Meir figured this Kidur is one of them. So he's an Azpon. Now, in that case, Maharsha asks, well, then why did he go into the inn in the first place? And he says, okay, maybe listen, maybe they didn't have, there was no other inn available, there was no place for them to stay, so he didn't have a choice but to go in. It was before Shabbos, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, right? So he may not have had a choice. Iyun Yaakov gives a couple of other points as well. First of all, he didn't want to separate from his traveling companions since they're not Medayek Bishma, and he didn't want to outright tell them this guy is a Rosha, because as the Gemara is going to go on to say, he himself is saying it's only a likelihood, it's not a certainty. He certainly can't tell them outright the guy's a Rosha when he doesn't have a strong enough basis for it. So he didn't want to separate from them and go stay someplace else. And then also, listen, it's an inn after all. An innkeeper is not going to go actually physically harm his guests because he wants repeat business. So for all those reasons, he didn't have a problem going in there, but now he knows to be on the alert. So Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi ashlimu lekisayu. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi gave them their wallets to keep for them for Shabbos, because yeah, it was Erev Shabbos, and they needed someplace safe to keep it, so they gave it to him for safety. Rabbi Meir lo ashlim lekisay. Rabbi Meir, since he had reason to suspect that this guy is a Rosha, so he didn't give him his wallet. Instead, also Rabbi Meir, Oisfe Bekada, instead he put his wallet inside an earthenware jug, Vekavre Bekivra Da'avur Da'ahu Gavra Bereshit, and he buried it in the caver of this Kidur's father near his head. So apparently right there on the property, not far from the inn, was this Kidur's father's caver, so Rabbi Meir went in there and put the jug near his head. The way they used to bury in those times, you find in various places in Shas, they would have burial caves, and in the walls of the cave, there would be niches carved out, and then they would put the mason inside those niches. You find in some places nowadays, you can go, there are some places in Eretz Yisrael and Beis Sha'arim up in the Galil, and in other places where you can find examples of such things. So for Pashtus, it wasn't that hard to get in there and put something over there. So often what they would do is, yes, so what they would often do, we often find in shafts, is eventually after the body decayed, right, they'd only keep it in these niches for a short amount of time. Eventually, once the flesh decayed, then they would gather up the bones and they would put them in a stone box and rebury them. That kind of thing is called likutatsamos. Yeah, they found examples of those such boxes all over Eretz Yisrael as well, yeah. But here it's mentioned that he put him by his head. So Bepashtus, I guess we have to understand that the father had passed away not long before that, and therefore his body is still basically intact.
Mr. Lukider, his father gave him that name. He didn't choose it. People that are running around with the names.
Well, that's what I was just saying. The Medrash brings that you do have sometimes people who have ugly names, but they do beautiful things, and the flip side is also true. So here, Reb Meir is not saying for sure the guy is a Rasha, but he says there's a high likelihood. Yeah, and like I said, if his father gave him that name, that may mean his father, or that his father was no great sheikhs either. And in fact, the next piece of the story kind of bears that out. Because Ischazile Avur Bechelma, that night, and we're talking Friday night, Kido's father came to him in a dream. He said, Tosh Shoko Kisa Demanach Beresh Dahu Gavra. Come, take this purse of money that's located near that person's, meaning my head. So you see that the father was no great guy either, that he's coming, that his neshama is coming from wherever it is to go and tell his son to go and steal the guest's money.
He's got no free will. He's bound by the
It's not a matter of free will or not. I mean, the fact that he even has such a thing to come for that purpose, yeah. Anyway, so Lamacha also came to the mayor. So the next morning, Shabbos morning, Kiddur comes to the mayor, and he says to the mayor, "Hochi ischazi libechamai. I saw such and such in my dream." So what does it mean? Now, why did he only ask Reb Meir? Ben Yehoyada says maybe, first of all, he realized Reb Meir is the leader among them, so therefore it makes most sense to ask him. Second of all, he says, you know, given that, as the story is going to go on, he wants to deny that he ever received purses of money from Reb Yehuda and Reb Yossi. It wouldn't do very well to tell them a story where involving a purse of money. Because when you want to deny something, it's best that you don't mention that kind of thing at all. And he mentions also maybe he wanted to see the expression on Reb Meir's face, and based on that, he would know whether it's a true dream or not. Anyway, so Reb Meir tells him, don't worry about it. Dreams that a person has Friday night don't mean anything, because a person is relaxed and resting on Friday night, so therefore he tends to think of all kinds of shtusim. So such a dream doesn't mean anything at all. By the way, though, Marsha says, Taka, the fact is it was a true dream after all. The fact is the money was located near his father's head. So how did such a dream come about? You have a true dream come through a malach, the Gemara tells us in Brachas. A false dream comes through a shed. A malach is obviously not going to tell him a truth that he should go and steal the mayor's money. But the fact is it is a true dream, so it can't have been through a shed. And he says, it's one of those chaloimus, that here he was thinking from Erev Shabbos, you know, the other two guests gave me their money, the third one didn't. I wonder where his money is. And sure enough, the Balach Chaloim, the Malach of dreams, Taka gave him a dream following that, what he was thinking, following his line of thought, where the money is. Anyway, so the mayor is basically giving him an excuse. To tell him to not worry about the dream. Nevertheless, Reb Meir is concerned. What if Kiddur doesn't fall for that? Also, Reb Meir naturally called Yomer. So Reb Meir went there and was watching the place the whole rest of the day, so Kiddur doesn't sneak in there at some point and take his money. La'urta shakla the kisav asa. After Shabbos was over, he took his money and then went. Meanwhile, L'machar, the next day, Sunday morning, they're getting ready to go. Omru le'havlon kisin, so Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi say to Kiddur, give us back our purses. Omru le'hu le'hoi dvar ma'olam, and he denies that they ever gave them to him in the first place. Omru le'hu Reb Meir, so now Reb Meir says to them, amai le'tiv t'gu b'shma, why don't you think in the first place to check into his name? Omru le'hoi, because after all, the name Kiddur indicates that he may be a Rasha. And you see, Taka, that he turned out to be a Rasha, because now he's denying that you ever gave him your money. So they said to him, Amai lo amrit lan mar, nu, Rebbe, why didn't you tell us about this concern with the name? He says, Emu da amri ano achashasha. All I'm saying is there's a chash that such a person with a name like that might be a Rosha. Achzuki mi Amri. Did I ever say that means a chazaka that the guy is a Rosha? So I couldn't tell you. It would be poshut saying Lashon Hara about the guy to say he might be a Rosha just on the basis of his name. In fact, Beni Aryada says that's another reason why he stayed at the inn as well, is because again, like you and Yaakov said, he didn't want to separate from his chaverim, and he didn't want to tell them, I have reason to suspect the guy, because how can you do that when the guy may be a perfectly good yid? Well, what are they going to do? How are they going to get their money back? They told Kiddur, come, let's take you to a wine shop and we'll treat you to a drink. And they gave him wine to drink. The idea being, so they figured they'll get him drunk and then he'll reveal the secret to them where he put the money. Then they noticed there were lentils, bedikne would be in his beard, asfame means in his mustache, which, since the Gemara is going to mention about here, about Mayim Achronim, then the girsa that was on his mustache makes better sense. Anyway, so now they realize we don't even need to get the guy drunk. We have a way now of getting our money back. They noticed there were lentils stuck in his beard or his mustache. That showed, in other words, so now they realized that he had recently eaten lentils and he hadn't taken care, as the Gemara was going to say, by my machronim, you're supposed to brush off any remaining food from your mustache, and he hadn't done that. So therefore, they now realize they have a simon that they can use to talk to his wife like this. In other words, if they were to go and send a messenger to Kiddur's wife, or they would go to her personally and say, can you give us back our money? She would also deny it like her husband. But if she thinks that her husband is telling her to send her the money, then she'll give it to a messenger. Well, all they need is some kind of like secret password to trick her. So Oslo Yav was similar to Simon Ledvesu. So they went and gave that simon to the wife. They said, your husband said you should give us the two bags of money that were deposited with him Erev Shabbos. And the simon that you should know that the message is actually from him is that you all ate lentils together last night. So now they're able to get their money bags back, and they went. When Kiddur found out what happened, he went and killed his wife out of anger that she had given away the money. In fact, the Yerushalmi says even further that the Yerushalmi says when it tells the story that Kiddur's son tried to intervene to prevent that, and Kiddur killed him as well, and then Kiddur himself went and committed suicide. By the way, there is an interesting discussion among the Achronim on the question: do these Chachamim maybe bear any responsibility for this or these deaths over here that we're talking about? There's a late Rishon or early Achron, the Mahariv Vial, who talks about a case where a person sends a shliach to do something for him, and the shliach gets killed to a certain extent. The Mishaleach, he says, needs a kapara for the fact that indirectly through him a yid was killed. And various Achronim talk about different angles on that. Well, Kiddur was Jewish, yeah. You have, for example, there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin where Hashem says to David HaMelech that you bear a certain degree of responsibility for the fact that Noivir HaKoyanim was wiped out and that Shaul and Doeg were killed because when David had been there and he hadn't actually told Achimelech that he's running away from Shaul, and Achimelech, the Kohen Gadol, had given him Lachem upon him and a sword, and that made it possible for Doeg to master on them, etc., the whole thing. So Hashem holds David responsible to a certain extent for what happened. And the Gemara tells a whole story there what happened. So the Ma'ariv brings that concept, and various Achronim after it discuss angles on it. So now, how does that mean over here that these Chachamim bore any responsibility for what happened over here? So the Ben Yehoyada brings from the Chidah and from the who in turn brings from the Noda Behorda that maybe not. Maybe in this case, given that they had asked her to return the money, the fact that Kiddur goes and does a serious aveda like that of murder is not on them, so therefore you can't necessarily hold them responsible even indirectly for what happened, as opposed to when you have, for example, that in the Ma'ariv's case, a person sent a shliach and then there was an accident and he got killed, then there might be a certain... He was watching because he didn't want his money to be stolen. Yeah, it was because the guy was Jewish, because the guy might be over on Shabbos. If the guy's going to be over on stealing, he might also be over on Shabbos and go and take it on Shabbos. Yeah. All right. So the Gemara says, "Hainu d'tnan d'tanya." This bears out what we learn in a brisa. Mayim harishonim hechilu b'sal chazir. You have an example where failing to wash mayim harishonim, failing to wash for bread, ended up a yid ended up eating chazir flesh. Rashi explains the story based on a Gemara in Cholin. There was a Jewish innkeeper or restaurateur who he was selling. He had two menus. He had a kosher menu for Jewish patrons and a non-kosher menu for the goyish ones. How could he do that? The yid is not allowed to make a business selling today for food. So one medrash tells that this was a time of a shema, the time of Zeres HaMalchus. So he's afraid to openly. So he and everybody else are afraid to openly show themselves as Jews. So he had a simon for himself. If he could tell that a customer coming into his restaurant is a Jew, then he'd give him from a secret kosher kitchen, and if not, then he'd give him from the non-kosher one. Another possibility is that maybe this yid was not careful about that mitzvah of shaloi lasas schara b'dvarim asurim. Anyway, what happened was then, so the way this fellow would tell whether his customer is a yid or a goy, he would look to see if the guy washes for bread. So one time a fellow comes in there, doesn't wash, sits down, orders a meal. So the restaurateur gives him from the treifa kitchen. Afterwards, when they're coming to settle the bill, he tells him the amount. The guy says, "What do you mean? This is a lot more expensive than I usually pay for over here." And the guy says, "Well, because this time you got the good stuff. You got the chazir flesh." Chazir flesh? What do you mean? I'm a yid. Well, how was I supposed to know you were a yid? You're supposed to wash for bread, and you didn't. So we see that failure to wash mayim rishonim led a yid to eating chazir. And then mayim achronim, hogros and nefesh, and failure to do mayim achronim, as in our story over here, caused people to get killed, because if Kiddur had done mayim achronim, he would have afterwards put the water on his lips, on his mustache, he would have wiped off the lentils, and then the chachamim would never have seen the lentils over there, and the rest of the story wouldn't have happened.
Find me some musical. I went to a restaurant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kosher, obviously a kosher restaurant.
Yeah.
I went to wash. As I'm washing, the shliach comes and says, "Not pass you straw with me."
Interesting. Good. Okay. Good. 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 Uh-huh. So there you're saying the other way around, that being careful with mayim rishonim prevented you from not eating pasakum. Good. So the Gemara says, "L'soif habu daiki b'shma." So now, after the story, Rab Yosi and Rab Yehuda became much more careful as far as paying attention to people's names. So, for example, Kimotel Abesa de Gavre de Shma Bola, when they one time Mayim Achronim, Hogros HaNefesh. I said the failure to do Mayim Achronim caused somebody to be killed, because we said if Kiddur had washed Mayim Achronim, he would have wiped off his mustache, and there wouldn't have been lentils there, and then. Yeah. So the Soif Habu Daiki Bishma, later on, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yosi became more careful as far as checking into people's names. Kimotel Abesed Gavra Deshmei Bola. So when one time they came to the house of a person named Bola, Loi Ailu Legabe, they wouldn't even go into the house. Omru, because they said, Shma Mino Roshahu, you see, the name Bola may also indicate that he's a Rosha. We find the Navi Yechezkel gives a long mashal comparing the Jewish people to two women who were mezane, Ohola and Oliva. We mentioned them in one of the kinnos of Tisha B'Av. At one point, the Navi says in Hashem's name, I thought at one point, I said, labola ni'ufim, about the one who's worn out from ni'uf. In other words, how long can a person go continuing to do ni'uf? Eventually, a person wears out from it. So I thought maybe eventually they'll give it up, and no, they're not. So the point is, the word Bala is used in connection with Niyuf and Avodah Zarah. So they realize now that a name like Bala, similar to the name Kiddur, indicates that the person may be a Rosha. So here they don't even want to go into the house, first of all, for all the reasons before, because it's not Erev Shabbos, so it's not like they're in a hurry to find someplace to stay. Ion Yaakov points out it's not an inn, unlike with Kiddur, at least it's an inn, and an innkeeper is not going to actually try to harm his guests. Here it's not an inn, it's a private house, so there's more of a concern about that. And then another point is also that, after all, if they're concerned about Niyuf, if they're concerned that the guy is a guy who does Niyuf, who's Mizana, then you have to stay away from such a person's house. Mela with Kiddur, they figure he's a dishonest person, and he turned out to be. There's no problem being in such a person's house, but with Niyuf, you have to stay far away from him. You have to be a bucky in Tanakh to know these things, I suppose so, yeah. Well, maybe there's an advantage in that nowadays there are a lot fewer names that people make up, so you don't have to, okay. The Mishnah talks about, so we know that Pikuach Nefesh Doicha Kola Torah Kula, so the Mishnah mentions in this connection, what if a person was bitten by a rabid dog? the dog that's suffering from rabies. And if it bites a person, then it can transmit to the condition to him. It's a very deadly disease. So the example of Bulmus, the pastures, is something where right there on the spot you have to give him to eat, otherwise he may be in great danger. Yeah. Pastures would be any other kind of sudden attack like that. Yeah. Okay, so anyway, the Mishnah goes on to describe a person who was bitten by a dog suffering from rabies. Now, the sort of Masya ben Chorosh says in the Mishnah that there was a cure that people used to do in those times. You would take part of the lobe of the liver or the diaphragm, you would kill the mad dog, you would take a piece of its liver or of the diaphragm, which is attached to the liver, and you would give it to the person who was bitten by the dog, and it was supposed to cure him. So now, obviously, that's Tzrefus. But the Masya ben Chorosh says you're allowed to do it because Pekorach Nefesh Doth HaKala Tera Kola. The Chachamim disagree and say you can't. And the Rambam says, not because they disagree with that concept, but because they say that's not really a refuah. It's not like there's a medical thing that will help. It's more of a skula. It's more of one of those, more like one of those skulas that people do for various things. There's not really a logical basis for it that you should be allowed to override the dinim of kashrus for it. So the Gemara brings in this connection of some details about rabid dogs and about what you do with them. First of all, Tana Rabbanan, Chamisha Dvarim Nemru B'Kelev Shoita. There are five characteristics that you can see in a rabid dog. Piv Pasuach, its mouth is hanging open. V'rire Notif, its saliva is dripping, like it's drooling. V'oznav Sruchos, its ears are flopping down. Its tail is tucked between its legs, and it walks by the sides of the street instead of a normal dog would just run in the middle of the street. Rabies is a disease that attacks the central nervous system. So basically, you have now this dog it's not able to function normally. So therefore, like it can't pick up its ears like a normal dog would. It's not able to close its mouth like a normal dog would, etc. The Yesh Emraf Neveach in Kodin Nishma, some say there's a sixth simon, it barks and you can't hear it, like it's lost its voice as well. There is a vote on it that says that Gemara is also hinting at the dangers of a Baal Lashon Hara. His mouth is constantly open to speak Lashon Hara, and he's dripping saliva of venom, of hatred to people. And meanwhile, he himself has his tail tucked between his legs, in the sense like all of his own bad qualities, he does his best to carefully hide, etc. Anyway, Mimai Havi, how does a dog get this disease in the first place? Rav Oma Noshim Kashfonius Misachkos Bo. So Rav says because women who are practicing witchcraft are playing around with it, like they're showing off their witchcraft abilities and causing this dog to get this disease. Shmuel Oma Ruach Rosh showed all of. Shmuel says it's because an evil spirit, like a shed or something, is resting on the dog. So my benayu, what's the practical difference? Ika benayu lemikdale b'davar hanizra. How should you, if you're going to try to kill such a dog, how should you kill it? According to Shmuel, best you should use something that you throw from a distance. Because if noshim kashfonius mesachkos by fine. Right now there are no noshim kashfonius over here, so no problem. You can kill the dog at close range or further away. But if like Shmuel says, Ruach Ra Shor Olav, you don't want to get too close to it. Therefore, you would do well to kill it using something from far away, for example, a rock or an arrow or something like that, in order that you don't get too close and be affected by those Ruachas Rois yourself. Tanya Kavasei to Shmuel, and in fact, we learn a Braisa that agrees with Shmuel. Shahoganose, when it comes to killing a mad dog, ain't Hoganose Alabadavra Nizrak, you should only kill it with something that's thrown, because otherwise, if you get too close to it, then you're going to be endangered by it yourself. So the Gemara continues. If such a dog rubs against such a person, so it doesn't actually bite him, but it just rubs against him, mistaken, then that person is going to be in danger. It won't necessarily kill him, because he was not necessarily going to catch the germs from the dog, but he is going to be, his life is going to be in a certain degree of danger. The nochisle, and if the person is bitten by the dog, and then it actually gets into his bloodstream, moist, then he's going to die. Even nowadays, by the way, they have treatments for rabies, but it can only be given before the person starts developing the symptoms. Once the person starts developing the actual symptoms of it, it's almost always too late. I think they have a few years back, there was one particular case where a girl developed such symptoms and they were still able to save her. But in general, once, yeah, The Yerushalmi, in fact, says on it that we never heard of anybody actually being cured from the bite of mad dogs. Eh? But here in the Bavli, the Gemara is going to give remedies for it. So my takante, what should the person do? What should the person do if? Sorry, I skipped. If they mistake in my takante, so we're saying that if the dog just rubs against the person, that alone is dangerous. My takante. So what should he do to? To correct the situation? Nishlach money. He should strip off his clothes. Vinishdinu kame and throw them in front of the dog. Vinuhot and run. As we have the example that happened with her Huna Breder of Yeshua. He was one time standing in the street, one of these mad dogs rubbed against him in the street. Shalach money, so he took off his clothes, Vashoda Kameh, and threw them in front of the dog, Vrohat, and he ran. Omar, so he said, Kiyamti Batsmi, a Chochma to Chayabalaha. With that, I was Makayim in myself, as we have the Pasuk, Chochma keeps its owner alive. We had a similar example yesterday in the Gemara where a person knows these kinds of things from Torah, these kinds of obscure things in Torah, and that saves his life. Next, the Nochis Lemois, we said when a person was bitten by a rabid dog, then he's going to die. My Takante, so how should he fix it up? How should he fix up the situation? What can he do? What can he do to counteract that? Amrabaya, Nesi Mashcha de Appa Dichra. He should take the skin of a male Appa. Now, what is an Appa? Rashi says that it's identical with a creature called in Lashon Kodesh Savoy. It translates it with a French word, which means a polecat, which is an animal similar to a skunk. There are various other Rishonim have different other possibilities of what an apa or a tzavoya is. The Oruch brings that it's a type of snake related to the word fe, which means a snake. There's possibilities that they bring up that maybe it means a leopard or a hyena, whatever. So you take the skin of a male creature of that kind, the nicht of alei, and you write on the skin the following lach, ana ploni bar plonisa. I, Pliny ben Plonis, amashcha de apa de dichra kasivna aloch. I am writing on the skin of a male apa. I'm writing on you the following lachash. Kanani kandi chlorus kandi va'amilo. Or some say it should be kandi kansi chlorus. Then you write ka Hashem tzvakos twice the name Yudke Hashem tzvakos omen sel. Then the nashlach money. Then he should take off his clothes. The nikburino b'kivra, the parshas drachim ad treisa yache shata. He should bury his clothes in a grave by a crossroads until 12 months. Labosa hachi. After 12 months have passed, nifkinu. He should take out the clothes. The niklinu the money and burn them. The nivdur kitma the parshas drachim and scatter the ashes by a crossroads. So all of that together. I mean, I don't know if necessarily under normal circumstances the guy's going to be alive after 12 months. But if he is, then if he is, then you do then at this point you do that, and that should help him. Now, during those 12 months, when he drinks, he should not drink directly. He should not drink directly from a cup. Or from whatever, he should drink only with a copper straw. It doesn't daft have to be copper, Mephoshim say, but it means he should drink dafka with a straw. Duma chozole bavua de shed, because otherwise he may see the reflection of a shed in the water or in whatever it is that he drinks, or mistaken, and then he'll be in danger. The point being, in other words, that like this, we said before, one cause of rabies, we said, is a shed that rests on the dog. So now what you have is, so you're going to have a shed lurking around him. If he sees the reflection of the shed in the water, he's going to be in danger, because now this disease, rabies, it's also called, in medical literature, they also call it hydrophobia. Because part of what happens is the person's throat swells up and closes, and he's not able to drink. That's part of what kills a person suffering from it. So now what happens is then, so the Gemara is saying over here, it's a matter of, it's not that the muscles of the throat are naturally closed up, it's rather from fear of seeing the shed. Therefore, if he drinks out of a straw like that, he won't see a reflection of the shed. Therefore, his throat muscles will stay open and he'll be able to drink. There's a very interesting thing brought in this connection that Ramban and Rabbeinu Bachaye bring this in connection with, you have in Parshas Chukas. You have the story that where the Jewish people complained about the man, and Hashem sent snakes, and then they asked Moshe to daven to them for Hashem, and Hashem says, "Asei l'cha nachash." So the Ramban and the Rabbeinu B'chaya make a point over there based on our Gemara over here. So here we're saying that a person was bitten by a dog, he may see, by a rabid dog, he may see a reflection of that shed, or there's other places where it says he may see a reflection, he may imagine, I think the Ramban phrases it, he may see a reflection of the actual dog itself in the water, like in his imagination, because he was bitten by a dog, now he's going to see a reflection of the dog in the water, and that's going to scare him. So usually, in other words, a person was bitten by a rabid dog, you want to make sure to keep away from him any possibility of even seeing or even imagining the shape of a dog, as we're saying over here, that you should drink out of a straw. And here, the Eibishter doesn't work that way. They were bitten by snakes, and Hashem is telling Moshe, make a copper snake, and anybody who sees that snake will live, because the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah tells us they'll look up and focus on Hashem. So Hashem cures them with something that B'derech HaTeva would be even more dangerous for them.
He's bitten by a rabid dog. He's got it himself. You got to stay away from the guy.
This may also be true, but we're not getting into that. But yeah. So the Gemara gives an example. As you have the example of Abba bar Mauta, otherwise known as Abba bar Manyumi, could be Mauta was his mother's name and Manyumi was his father's name. Anyway, Avdalei ime guf sedava. His mother, he was bitten by a rabid dog like that, and so his mother made for him a golden straw. I guess his family was rich. The itzi, so that he would be able to drink again during the 12-month period when he's recovering. The itzi, and sure enough, he was cured. So you see that kind of thing works. Beruchni is the whole thing. I mean. So there could be that's related to this. So I did mention, yeah, there is somebody who says that that the whole remez of the five or six simonim of a rabid dog have to do with a Baal Lashon Hara. So yeah, I mean, everything in Gashmius comes from Ruchnius, but what specifically this whole thing refers to Ruchnius, I don't know, beyond the fact that, again, that Ramban and Rabbeinu B'chaye point out this business about how Hashem cures with the very agent that was used for the disease, unlike a boss of a dumb who can't do that. But other than that, I don't know what all this represents specifically. All right, so the Gemara continues. Now, so the Mishnah goes on to mention another case. You can have a case where a person is, the Mishnah says, a choshesh begroin. A person is having a pain in his throat, or a different gear says, a choshesh bepir. Whatever. The Mishnah says you can put medicine in on Shabbos, even though Midrabani, you're not supposed to take medicines on Shabbos, but here you're allowed to because it can be a matter of pikuach nefesh because it can spread to the rest of the body. The Gemara explains specifically the disease we're talking about. We're not just talking about any old sore throat. We're talking about a disease called Safdina. What Safdina is, a number of Sfarim say that it may be scurvy, which the Gemara mentions over here, a thing of it that when he puts anything between his teeth, his gums bleed, which is one of the obvious signs of scurvy. So scurvy is a dietary deficiency disease. They discovered that a couple hundred years ago. Sailors used to be particularly prone to it because they eventually found you need vitamin C to counteract it. And on ship, they didn't have anything along with it. A couple hundred years ago, they figured that out. They started giving, for example, they started giving the soldiers in the British Navy, they started giving them lime juice to drink on sea voyages. That's why Britishers are called limeys. Anyway. So some say that Safdina is scurvy. Anyway, so the Gemara says Rabbi Yochanan chosh bet Safdina. So Rabbi Yochanan was one time suffering from Safdina. Also gaboda he makunisa. He goes to a certain noble goyisha lady, Avdalei Milsa Chamsho Male Shabza. So she gives him a medicine that she gives him a cure that he should take on Thursday and on Friday. He says, what about on Shabbos? He, at this point, it wasn't dangerous enough that he should be allowed to take it on Shabbos. Because midrabanan again, because he can't take medicine on Shabbos. She tells him by that time you won't need it anymore. He says, "Im itzterich namai." And what happens if I do still need it on Shabbos? So she says, "Ishtabali dele magus." Swear to me that you won't reveal the secret if I tell it to you. I have to tell it to you because I understand you can't come it to me on Shabbos, but I want you to swear that you won't tell anybody else. Because like this, she was making a fortune from selling this cure to other people. So he swore, he said, to the Jewish God, I will not reveal it. Sounds very much like a shavuot. Gaulele, so she told him the secret. Nafak dosha bapirka. Rabbi Yechanan then turned around and went and publicly gave it over in his drosha. So what is it? What the sickness was, except, you know, the Gemara is going to tell in a minute what the cure was. The question is, he swore to her not to tell it. How could he break his oath? The answer is, he said, he said to the Jewish God. He didn't say by the Jewish God. If he had said, Bela Kod Yisrael, it would mean, I swear by the God of the Jews that I won't tell. Instead, he said, Lela Kod Yisrael. So fine, I'm not going to reveal it to the Jewish God, but I'll reveal it, Hola Ami Yisrael Maglina. I will be free to reveal it to the Jewish people. So the Gemara asks, well, Iko Chilul Hashem, still, isn't there a Chilul Hashem involved that she's going to think that Jews don't keep their promises? And the answer is, Demaglilam Me'ikra, to begin with, As soon as he swore, and then she right away told him the secret, right? He didn't wait until he darshened it in his pirka and then news is gonna get back to her. He told her right there on the spot, after he told him the secret, you should know that I tricked you, I wormed the secret out of you. In fact, what I swore was not a true shvor. And the reason is he wants to do it to push it to benefit the public. This way, in the future, if other people are suffering from this disease, they have now a cure instead of having to go to her and pay her for it. The Yerushalmi, by the way, when it tells the story, it says what happened after that. The Yerushalmi brings two versions of what happened. One is that she was so upset that now she lost this big source of income of hers, is that she committed suicide. The other version in the Yerushalmi is she was so impressed that Rabbi Yochanan has now this great secret that he could also be charging huge amounts of money for, like she was doing, and instead he gave it away for free, that she became a Gioris. Yes, it would have been a Chilul Hashem if he thought that he had promised her not to tell the secret, and now she finds out afterwards that he went and revealed it, then it would be a Chilul Hashem. She'd think Jews don't keep their promises. That's the thing. So that's the Gemara is saying. What he did was, what happened was, he said, L'alakod Yisrael L'maglin. Then she told it to him. Immediately there, while they're still standing over there, he told her, now you should know, I've tricked you. And now in the future, when I tell the secret, don't think that it's going to be that I'm not keeping my promise. You should realize that to begin with, that was not an actual promise because I said, L'alakod Yisrael. Yeah. So what happened? What was the cure? We'll learn tomorrow, Rav Sachem. These days, if you're suffering from such dinner, go take some vitamin C. In general, as you know, we're not allowed, even the Rishonim already talk about, you're not allowed to use the cures that I mentioned in the Gemara. We don't know exactly how to do them. And then if a person uses them and they don't work, he's going to think, you know what, the same way as the Chachamim don't know this, maybe they don't know other things as well. And it's going to weaken his emunah. All right. So we know that the Rebbe was talking about, in order to bring the Moshe Mashiach, we have to take on a Chlotas Tovas, especially when people are taking on a Chlotas Tovas to learn the entire Torah, or Lukutu Torah, from beginning to end. Through learning such things of Torah, we bring even faster the Hamshach of the Poyah. There is, in fact, now a project that I've seen that they've started not so long ago to learn the whole Torah, or Lukutu Torah. I don't know the details of it, but you can look it up on Urban Torah or whatever. All right, continuing with halachas of kiddush. You're allowed to use yain mevushal for kiddush. You're also allowed to use wine that has honey or other sweeteners in it. The point is, even though such wine can't be used on the mizbeach, and there are rishonim who hold that you can only use wine that can be used on the mizbeach for kiddush, but the accepted halacha is not like that. So there are opinions that say that you shouldn't. So if possible, you should use other wine. However, the Alter Rebbe says either the minhag is that people use them even if he does have other wine, if this wine is better quality than that other wine. So if the best quality wine you have is not mevushal, then better you should use that. But if you have a better quality mevushal, then the Alter Rebbe is saying you can use that even l'chafet. Grape juice is also pashtus, the same thing. There is an inyan to use wine, but if a person needs grape juice because wine is bad for their health or whatever, then yeah, it's also allowed. No, grape juice itself, no. You had wine couldn't be used on the mizbeach lachila until it was 40 days old, and by that time it's turned to wine already. By that time, the grape juice has fermented. So according to the Rishonim, who say that it has to be something that can be usable on the mizbeach, Yutaka might not be able to use grape juice. But according to the rest of them, you would.
You also worry about the servants and the goyim and the
shikhs. If you have a goyisha cleaning lady or something, yeah, then you may be forced to use my mevushal for that matter. If you have guests who are not shomer Shabbos, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Indeed, yeah. Okay.